Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So you've brought us some fascinating sources today, really a blueprint for anyone looking at Southeast Asia.
That's right. We're diving into the Economy AFEA 2025 research. It's by Google, Temasek, and Bain, the usual suspects. And this is their 10th edition.
10th edition. And it covers all 10 ASEAN countries now, right? That's ZEAN for anyone keeping track.
Exactly. All 10. And look, this report, it feels like it marks a real point of maturity for the region's digital economy. It's less about just tracking growth now and more about, you know, understanding the big strategic shifts.
Like business models, investment. AI.
Precisely. Business models, where the money's going, and yeah, the huge impact of AI. So our mission today really is to pull out the strategic intelligence. If you're crafting an e-commerce strategy for SEA, what do you need to know from this?
Okay, let's start with a headline figure then, because wow, the digital economy there is set to blow past $300 billion in GMV, gross merchandise value.
Yep. $300 billion in 2025. And GMV, just quickly for everyone, is the total value of everything sold through these digital platforms.
And that $300 billion figure, that's way higher than they initially thought, isn't it?
It's massive. It's 1.5 times what they first predicted back in the first report a decade ago. It just shows this incredible, sustained, double-digit growth, like around 15% year on year.
But it's not just the size, it's how people are interacting, right? The foundations have shifted.
Completely. We're way past early adoption. The data here paints a really clear picture for strategists. 3 out of every 5 people are shopping online now. That's huge penetration.
Okay, 3 out of 5. But you said the payment side is the real kicker.
That's the fundamental infrastructure change. Over 60% of all transactions are digital now.
60% digital. That's flipped completely.
Literally flipped. Just think, back in 2019, before COVID really accelerated things, it was the other way around. Over 60% was cash.
Wow.
So in just a handful of years, the whole financial plumbing of the region has inverted. For any business strategist, that's maybe the single most important fact. Digital payments are now the default. You have to operate on that assumption.
And e-commerce is still the big engine in that digital world. The sources say it's actually picking up speed again, even with all the macro pressure.
Yeah, it's showing real resilience. Growth momentum is back, but the landscape is changing. The report really stresses this consolidation.
Meaning fewer, bigger players.
Exactly. You've got these large regional players who are just getting better and better at using their size, their economies of scale.
And how are they doing that? What's the key lever?
Video commerce. That's the strategic game changer right now. It's not some, you know, niche feature anymore.
Okay.
The projections are saying video commerce will drive something like 25% of all e-commerce GMV in 2025.
25% from what?
Well, back in 2022, it was less than 5%. So yeah, that's just explosive growth.
Okay, hold on. Let's unpack that 25% because the report had a really interesting nuance there.
Yeah.
This massive GMV jump. It's not people buying, like, more expensive stuff.
No, absolutely not. That's the key insight. It's almost entirely volume driven.
Volume. So just more transactions.
Loads more. The market is fundamentally being reshaped by the sheer number of transactions. We're talking a 50% year over year increase in volume. 50%.
Okay, so 50% more transactions. What does that do to the average order value, the AOV?
It pulls it down. All that volume, these frequent small purchases, it's actually dragged the overall AOV for the entire e-commerce sector down from last year.
High frequency, low value. What does that signal strategically? Margins must be tight. Logistics complex.
That's the new reality you have to plan for. Video commerce itself, the AOV is tiny. Like $6 to $7 per order on average.
$6 or $7.
Yeah.
Compared to the overall average.
Overall, e-commerce AOV is still around $11 to $13. So video commerce orders are roughly half the value.
Right.
And this points directly to this idea of shoppertainment. You know, it's like scrolling TikTok, but you're buying things. It's entertainment first, transaction second.
But for a business, that means your cost per item shipped has to be rock bottom, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're moving more packages, smaller values, thinner margins.
Exactly. Scale and efficiency aren't just nice to haves. They become survival critical. Your logistics have to be incredibly lean.
And this shoppertainment, it lives or dies by the person on screen, the creator. The sources really hammered home the trust aspect.
Oh, absolutely fundamental. Product success is just totally tied to the live e-format. Get this. 80% of the top performing products were featured in live streams. 80%.
Wow. So authenticity is key. How do creators maintain that?
It takes serious effort. The top creators, they're broadcasting a median of over 30 live streams per month.
30 a month? That's basically every day.
Pretty much. It shows you have to be constantly present, constantly engaging to build and keep that trust. Trust is absolutely the currency here.
Okay, so we have this video-driven, trust-based model. Where does AI fit into the platform strategy? Because you mentioned trust meets tech here.
And consumers are adopting it fast, really fast. The research found 62% of consumers in Southeast Asia say AI-powered features have already influenced what they bought.
62%?
Yeah.
Influenced by AI, like what kind of features?
Mostly things like those hyper-personalized product recommendations you see everywhere now. You know, people like you also bought, but on steroids.
Right.
So the strategic takeaway is pretty stark. If your platform isn't using AI to guide, suggest, and personalize the shopping journey right now, you're already falling behind your competitors.
Which needs investment. Let's talk capital. If AI is the edge, where's the money flowing? The sources mentioned funding was up a bit overall.
Yeah, private funding saw a cautious uptick, up about 15% to $7.7 billion in the last year. But the structure of that funding, completely different.
How so? Cautious means?
It means investors are being really selective.
Mm-hmm.
The money is overwhelmingly going into late stage deals, proven companies.
Okay.
The share of funding that went to Series C, D, E, and beyond, it jumped to about 80% of the total pie.
80% in late stage. Mm-hmm. So they want safety, maturity, proven paths to profit, not just potential.
You got it. Less appetite for early stage risk right now. They're backing established players.
And the sector getting the lion's share of that late stage money is digital financial services, DFS.
Oh, DFS is the absolute darling. It just hoovered up capital. We're talking 45% to 50% of the total deal value.
45 to 50%. Wow. Up from what?
Up from around 30% previously. It's a huge shift.
Why DFS? What's the strategic appeal there?
Well, think back to that cash to digital flip we talked about. DFS builds the fundamental infrastructure needed for that new reality. It's not just payments. It's lending, especially for SMEs and consumers. It's the digital payment rails themselves.
So it's seen as less risky than, say, another e-commerce platform because it powers all the transactions.
Exactly. It underpins the whole digital economy. Investors see those recurring revenue streams from transaction fees, lending interest. It feels like a safer bet in this climate compared to the cutthroat competition in B2C e-commerce.
Okay, DFS is the safe bet. But you also said AI is a bright spot, despite the caution.
Yeah, it's the other major theme in funding. About 30% of all private funding in the last 12 months went into AI-related investments somehow.
30% is still pretty significant. And Singapore is the hub.
Clearly the regional hub for AI investment. Singapore pulled in $1.31 billion, which is like 55% of the total AI funding for the whole region.
So 55% in one country. But other markets have interesting AI profiles too.
For sure. Vietnam, for instance, leads the whole region in just general AI engagement and, crucially, trust in AI. And in Malaysia, users seem particularly open to letting AI help them make decisions. So investors are definitely chasing the tech, even if that late stage focus shows they're trying to de-risk it.
Which leads us nicely to this. You know, this paradox the report flagged, the AI cost value paradox. If labor costs in Southeast Asia are relatively low.
Yeah, much lower than the West.
Why sink 30% of funding into AI?
Yeah.
Isn't it super expensive to develop and run these advanced models, especially those coming out of, say, Silicon Valley?
That's the core tension strategists have to grapple with. The numbers are stark. The weighted average wage in SEA is only about 5% of the average U.S. wage. 5%. So if your only goal for AI is simple task automation, just replacing a human worker, the return on investment, the ROI, often just doesn't stack up. The cost of running the sophisticated AI, often licensed from high-wage markets, can actually be more than the salary of the person it replaces.
So using AI just to cut basic labor costs doesn't make sense. The strategy has to be different. Where are businesses finding value then?
They're pivoting. They're focusing AI on high-value creation, things that humans can't do cheaply or effectively at scale.
Like what specifically?
Think really complex, high-impact problems. Sophisticated fraud detection that catches things humans would miss. Real-time demand forecasting for optimizing complex supply chains. Hyper-personalized risk assessment for those DFS lenders we talked about.
So it's not about replacing cheap labor. It's about doing something uniquely valuable that justifies the premium AI cost.
Exactly. The value generated is irreplaceable, and the ROI becomes much easier to justify. And the data actually supports this pivot. When they surveyed investors about the benefits they'd realized from AI in their portfolio, cost savings came out way on top. Realized by 64% of portfolios. But that's cost savings driven by efficiency gains and, crucially, avoiding big losses like fraud. revenue growth was much further behind, only 29%.
That's telling. Cost savings first, revenue second. Reflects that cautious environment again. Okay, let's loop back to trust one more time because you mentioned consumers are using AI tools.
Yeah, 75% use AI tools for daily tasks. They're enthusiastic users.
But cautious about giving up control.
Exactly. They're fine with AI suggesting a product or summarizing information, but they get nervous about delegating higher stakes decisions where mistakes have real consequences.
So for the next wave of AI, the agentic AI the report mentions, where the AI acts on your behalf.
Right. AI that can, say, negotiate a purchase or manage your finances autonomously. To make that commercially viable, trust is paramount. Businesses have to build systems that are transparent. Things like citing their sources clearly, always putting the user in charge, giving them control and the ability to override, and being absolutely upfront about pricing and how data is used. Without nailing that trust piece, agentic AI stays stuck in the lab.
Makes sense. Okay, shifting gears slightly towards the end here. Strategic takeaways.
Yep.
You mentioned video commerce. AOV varies a lot by country.
Hugely. And that demands totally different playbooks depending on the market.
Give us an example.
Okay, look at massive high-volume markets like Indonesia or the Philippines. Their video commerce AOV is incredibly low, like $4.50 per order.
$4.50, wow.
Wow. So there, you absolutely have to win on sheer volume and super efficient logistics. It's a scale game.
Okay, and contrast that with?
Contrast that with Singapore. Video commerce AOV, there's way higher, somewhere between $20 and $25.
Like triple the SEA average or more.
Exactly. So in Singapore, it's a different game. It's higher value, more concentrated. You need to focus on more premium products, maybe more curated content. It's not just about raw volume like in Indonesia.
Different strategies for different markets, even within the same trend.
Got it.
So looking ahead then, beyond AI and investment shifts, what else is driving the next decade?
Asian cooperation is a really big one. You're seeing the ecosystem literally start to share digital infrastructure.
Like the cross-border QR code payments.
That's a prime example. That initiative is a massive win, especially for DFS. It now covers 8 national payment systems. Cambodia just joined the RPC, the Regional Payment Connectivity Initiative. These shared digital rails are vital for making cross-border commerce and finance seamless.
That sounds really promising. But the report didn't end on a completely optimistic note, did it? There was a wild card.
Yeah, the biggest remaining wild card is regulation, regulatory choices.
How so? What's the risk?
Fragmentation and complexity. There's still major hurdles. Take data localization laws, for example, which you see in places like Indonesia and Thailand.
Requiring data to be stored locally.
Right. And while that can boost local data centers and infrastructure, it also restricts the free flow of data across borders, which is exactly what advanced AI needs to learn and improve quickly.
Precisely. So you have this tension, and then add fragmented compliance rules across different countries. It creates significant risk and cost, especially for deploying cutting-edge stuff like agentic AI. How regulators navigate these trade-offs, balancing local control versus enabling tech advancement that will really determine how high the region can fly.
A complex balancing act.
Yeah.
Okay, that was a really rich deep dive. Let's quickly recap the absolute must-knows for strategists.
Sure.
One, SEA's digital economy is rocketing towards $300 billion. Two, e-commerce growth is now heavily driven by this shift to high-volume, low AOV video commerce demanding extreme efficiency.
Right.
Three, investment is cautious, flowing to late-stage DFS, but AI is getting significant funding too.
But four, AI strategy needs to pivot from simple cost-cutting to high-value creation, like fraud prevention or supply chain optimization, to justify the cost in SEA. And five, trust underpins everything from creator commerce to adopting advanced AI. Transparency is key.
Got it. Okay, as we wrap up, let's leave our listeners with that provocative thought you mentioned earlier.
Right. So we've established Southeast Asia isn't really a card-based market fundamentally. It runs on e-wallets, on interoperable QR codes. Now, the world is moving towards agentic payment systems where AI can transact automatically, invisibly on our behalf.
Okay.
So the question is, given SEA's unique non-card payment rails, who's going to build the specific agentic payment infrastructure needed for that next wave of AI commerce? Will it be the local fintechs and innovators who built the current e-wallet system? Or will the big global card networks manage to adapt and take the lead?
Local innovators versus global giants for the future of AI payments in SEA. That is a fascinating battleground to watch.
Absolutely.
A perfect place to leave it. Thanks so much for digging into these sources with us.
My pleasure.
And thank you all for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next Deep Dive.